yeah. I wanna send this one out to all the Jeep lovers worldwide. Word them up, city to city, ghetto to ghetto. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today by my soon-to-be ex-husband, Miko Alon.
Hi, everyone.
We were fighting just before the show started, and...
I am completely innocent.
Miko, let's not bring this into the show. Let's keep it friendly and light and fun. And, but it's true, we were fighting. I mean, look, when you're, Miko and I have been together for over 15 years, and in gay years, that's like 100 fucking years. I mean, we've been together since fucking Abraham Lincoln's been president in gay years. And, you know, sometimes things can get, you know, a little difficult. I think people, you know, it's interesting, Miko. I think that people... And I've definitely heard this over the years. People say to me, oh, my God, how do you guys do it? You have such a perfect relationship. Everything's so great. And I'm like,
it's me.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, you don't live with us. You don't see what happens. We argue. We get on each other's nerves. You know, it happens. It happens. What are you going to do? I mean, that's I'm sure other couples who are listening can relate.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on. Welcome to the show. I am on Twitter. I am at Vegan Ari, and Miko is on Twitter as well, and he is at Miko Alon. So please follow us. And also, you know, during the week, if there's anything that you'd like us to discuss on the show, any questions you have about animal rights or veganism or what it's like to be married for 15 fucking years, you know, tweet that stuff over to us, and we'll try and answer it as best we can on the show in the week. This has been quite a week. Miko, I know I was really, really busy and crazy. How was your week?
It was the same.
Yeah, so lots of stuff to talk about. But first, I wanna talk about this story that that I read earlier in the week about this. It's really a sad story about this woman who was climbing Mount Everest and died. Yeah, I didn't realize this, but, you know, I guess climbing Mount Everest is extremely dangerous, and a lot of people lose their lives doing it.
Yeah.
But the reason why it seemed like this story was being reported on is because this woman, she's vegan, or was vegan, and she wanted to climb Mount Everest to, you know, prove that vegans can do anything. You know, it was like, and I don't, I mean, honestly, I don't know this woman, obviously. I've never, you know, spoken to her. So I'm not commenting on her or her death or anything like that. I just, you know, other than to say that it's just really sad that she died, you know, doing this. But I do think it made me think, well, first of all, the way that the press, you know, frame the story, I felt
like as if like no one who was not vegan had ever died on Everest.
Right. Not only that, but I just felt like it was so sensationalized, and it was basically like they were trying to say like, oh, look, this woman died because she was vegan on Mount Everest. It's like there's like 40 million dead bodies up there because of people who have, you know, died trying to do it. So it has nothing to do with her, you know, being vegan. But I think to me, what this spoke to is. And again, this is not commenting on her, but I do notice that a lot of people who are vegan, I feel like it's almost like we have something to prove. So it's like a lot of vegans will like, you know, it's like running marathons or trying to obtain some sort of, you know, crazy body type, or it's just like they go to extremes of some form of athleticism or something to prove like, hey, vegans can do this or vegans can do that. And I think it's sad that we do that. And I think that, you know, I just want to say, and I said this on Facebook, but I just wanted to say it here, like, you know, just by being vegan, you're doing so much. You know, you're trying to live your life in a way that causes the least amount of suffering for animals. You're also living your life in a way that's best for our planet and our environment. You don't have to put all this pressure on yourself to be, you know, an ultra marathoner or be, I mean, look, if you want to do that, do it. Okay. But don't feel like you have to do that to prove that vegans can do something. It's like Vegans, we don't need to do that. We already have Olympians that are vegan. We already have, like, world-class athletes that are vegan. We have the strongest man in the world. What's his name? Patrick, I can't pronounce his last name because it's like an Austrian long last name or something. But he's a vegan. We don't need
Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Well, kinda. We don't need to do all that. Just know that you are, I'm going to sound a little bit like Oprah here, and I'm sorry because it's not usually what, but you are enough. You are enough.
Exactly right.
You don't need to do all of that to prove anything. You are enough. And just by being vegan, you are doing so much. So just take, what's the word I'm looking for? Just take solace in that and don't feel like you have to prove to your friends, family, or to the world anything, because you don't have to.
No, I think it's true. And I think a lot of people who may have only a few friends who are vegan or whose families don't understand, it's enough to deal with that than also being like, oh, and now I also have to be a power lifter and a marathoner and a mountain climber.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people put pressure on themselves because of that, you know, because we hear so many things, you know, negative things about what vegans look like, you know, oh, they're weak, or, you know, we're all like a bunch of skeletons or whatever. I don't know, whatever the hell we hear. And it's just, you know, first of all, that stuff's bullshit. It's not true. But I don't think that we have to internalize that and then try and prove the opposite of it all the time. We don't have to do that.
And I have a question. In the articles, was she the sole casualty of this climb, or were there other?
No, apparently there were other people who also died on this climb, and it's really tragic. It's very sad.
It's very sad, but isn't it so, you know, just telling that the story became not, you know, five people died on Mount Everest. It's like, oh, a vegan died on Mount Everest.
Well, this was, of course, the splashy headline that they used, and it was really exploitative, and I thought it was in bad taste because it's not framing it correctly. Look, you can be the biggest fucking meat eater in the world and die on Mount Everest. It's very dangerous. You're climbing to, like, over 30,000 feet or something crazy. I mean, there's all sorts of issues that you can, you know, experience. And not just, you know, Everest. I mean, I have a friend who climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa, and they told her the same thing. It's like, you are taking a certain amount of risk doing something like that.
Yeah, so, and she's a vegan.
Yeah, she did it, and she's a vegan. That's true. So I just wanted to say that because I really, I don't know, I feel it, you know, I feel, and I think that when we first went vegan, I felt that too, like, you know, and I just, so if anyone's listening who feels that, just know that, you know, again, you're enough. Okay, moving on. I feel like now I should be giving away cars or something, like Oprah. Moving on, Miko and I, went to Whole Foods, which is, you know, obviously a pretty fantastic store for vegans because they have a lot of great options for us. They opened up a new concept store. I think it's the first one in the country, called 365. And basically what it is like a Whole Foods, but it's a little bit less expensive. And it's like a pared down Whole Foods. They're basically, what I read is that it's like Whole Foods version of Trader Joe's. And they opened the first one in Silver Lake, which is where we live in California, in LA. And we went this week. And holy shit.
Was it like opening day? It looked like opening day.
I don't know. I think it was the second day it was opening, but that shit was so busy. I mean, that shit was like Category 5 hurricane coming up the coast busy. Like, line out the door. It was like every Bernie Sanders supporter from like here to like fucking San Francisco piled into this store. It was
hoarding vegan pizza.
It was insanity. But you know what? It was really cool. Like, it was definitely noticeably cheaper than Whole Foods, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely.
It was definitely noticeably cheaper. They had a lot of like organic produce. They had a lot of vegan options. They had all the fake meat. And all of the, you know, the vegan cheeses, and they had like, you know, all that stuff there, which was really cool to see. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you think we're going to shop there?
I mean, I'd like to see, you know, just how, you know, much cheaper their organic produce may be, or, you know, I definitely think so.
I will shop there if we don't have to wait 45 minutes in line, because that was insane. Oh, and then the coolest thing I think about this 365 joint is that right next to it, and I think you can get to it through 365, Chloe Coscarelli, who I love, is opening a outpost of her By Chloe restaurant right next to it. So if you don't know who Chloe Coscarelli is, she is a vegan cookbook author, but she rose to fame because she won Cupcake Wars on the, what is it, the Food Network or Food Channel, or whatever the hell it's called?
Food Network, yeah.
Okay. So she won that with her vegan cupcakes, which was like so cool because she beat out all these idiots using eggs and dairy. Fuck them. And so now she has, she opened up a restaurant called By Chloe in New York after she wrote a couple cookbooks, which are, by the way, are amazing. Her recipes are super easy and super good. And By Chloe went, I mean, it's like insane in New York. Like, it's kind of like this 365. She opened it up in the Village right near where I went to school, right near NYU. And the line is out the door. Like, when we were in New York in October, we tried to go. We couldn't even go because the line was around the block. And apparently the food is amazing. So she's opening up a By Chloe in L.A. right next to this 365. And I peeked in because they have, like, this, like, thing up because it's not open yet. But, like, I could kind of see in a little bit.
And what's it look like?
And I saw Chloe on her laptop. And I was like, Chloe! No, I wasn't like that. But I really wanted to, like, fangirl all over her. It's crazy. I mean, like, some people get excited over, like, I don't know, Rihanna. But, like, Chloe Coscarelli is, like, I swear, if I met Rihanna, I'd be like, hey, what's up? If Chloe Coscarelli, I'd be like, I would be all, like, not knowing what to say. Yeah. I'd be like, your avocado pesto, though. Like, God. Well, whatever. But, yeah, she was in there working on her laptop.
It reminds me of the first time when we met Ingrid Newkirk. And people say, you know, don't gush, don't go crazy. Like, it's like, I gushed and I hugged her and she was like, oh.
Yeah, well, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. When you're involved in animal rights and this kind of stuff, those people kind of become your celebrities, your heroes, because they're the people that you admire. And I do love, like, I love what she does, you know. And this By Chloe, and, you know, by the way, she's opening up like two or three more spots in New York City, and she's opening up one in Boston. This woman's taking over the world. I say Chloe for president.
Well, maybe 2020.
2020, President Coscarelli. And here's the thing. She's half Jewish, half Italian.
That's a good combination.
It doesn't get better than that, folks. That's amazing. So she can do your sweet noodle kugel on, you know, for Passover, but she can also main a mean pasta bolognese. Vegan, of course. But yeah, I mean, yes, yeah, it's a great combo for food.
Yes.
Although I gotta say, and I don't want to get off track, I gotta say, I'm Jewish by heritage or culture or whatever. I'm not religious, peeps, so don't be talking. Don't be calling me on Shavuos, being like, happy Shavuos. I'm gonna be like, I don't know what the hell that is. But I will say, I like, my mom's side is Sephardic Jew. So that means they're like Spanish Jews, but really they were from the Middle East. Like, my mom's side is from Syria. My dad's side is Eastern European Russian. The Eastern European Russian food is not good. Like, with the exception of a couple things, but like, they're the side that like did like gefilte fish and like this, a lot of like fishy shit. Like, no, no.
Salmon mousse.
And not salmon mousse. Oh, my God. And not vegan friendly whatsoever. However, my mom's side, the Syrian side, I love that food. That's like tabbouleh and hummus and like grape leaves and like all sorts of, I love that food. Not to diss, you know, Jewish food. I'm not, you know, there's stuff on the Russian side that I like. Like, I like the sweet noodle kugel and I like borscht and stuff like that. But for the most part, not so good. I remember.
Maybe you could do the Eastern European Jewish vegan cookbook.
No one's buying that. No one's buying that. Trust me. Although I do like Humantashen.
See?
Humantashen are these little cookies that are shaped like triangles that we make on Purim. Yo, those are so good. And now they are like when I was growing up, they had like maybe like three or four flavors and they were, you know, they were good. But now they pimp out Humantashen. Now there's like s'mores Humantashen and like peanut butter chocolate Humantashen. We did not have this growing up. We just had like cherry, lemon.
And poppy seed.
Ugh, the poppy seed's the worst. Oh my God. All right, anyway, enough. Moving on. I did some cooking videos this week.
Yes.
For Mercy for Animals. So we've been doing these cooking videos that are similar similar to the stuff you see like on Facebook, like where it's like sped up and it shows you how to, you know, make stuff. So I shot 6 cooking videos in our kitchen, and one of the recipes is so crazy. So one of my coworkers who works in my department, who I adore, Sarah Von Alt, came up with this recipe where she takes a muffin pan, lines the muffin pan with sweet earth bacon, which is this vegan bacon, and then stuffs that with mac and cheese. And cooks it.
And I got to be here for that and eat that.
It was
crazy.
Unbelievable. So that recipe will be on there. We did a bunch of other stuff. But yo, our kitchen turns upside down when we do those videos. It's like a little, for someone like me.
I can barely get to my, you know, coffee.
For someone like me, who's a little bit of a neat freak.
A little bit.
I really have to like kind of go, oh, this isn't happening.
Yeah,
right,
I see
now.
You're sitting there at your laptop trying not to look.
I disassociate because I'm like, okay, like I'm not, everything's going to go back to being clean and orderly once this is done. Cause it's an upheaval.
Yeah.
I mean, the cameras and the lights and there's dishes and pots and pans. And I mean, Sarah's really great. She does like clean as she goes, which is great. And I obviously help out. I mean, that's what I'm there to do. But it's, you know, it's a little bit of chaos in my orderly world.
Yeah.
But the videos will be coming out soon and they're going to be awesome. Yeah. And also this week, MFA released a new undercover investigation.
This was big news.
Yeah, this was really big news. So, by the way, this isn't just any undercover investigation. This is actually Mercy for Animals' 50th.
Wow.
Undercover investigation from inside of America's factory farms and slaughterhouses. And I'm really, really proud of that. MFA, we looked at something earlier this week about like all the other organizations that have done undercover work inside of these places. And I think MFA has done more than half of all of them. So MFA
That's
is
very impressive.
Thank you. MFA has really done a lot to bring, you know, all of this to light about what happens to these animals before, you know, before they reach our plates. But this investigation was done at a Tyson facility. Tyson, by the way, is the largest poultry producer in the United States. I'm sorry, in the world. The largest poultry producer in the world. And they're the largest meat producer in the United States. And the stuff that we uncovered is just so, so upsetting. You know, these poor, poor birds that are just left to suffer. You know, they're bred to grow so fast that they can't even support their own weight. And, you know, they have all sorts of like deformities in their legs and stuff. And then, oh, God, they're brutally treated. And, you know, I was thinking like when I was, because I've seen, you know, this is like, I think the 4th investigation we've done inside of a Tyson facility. And we have an ongoing campaign. So if you go to TysonTorturesAnimals.com, you can sign our petition. You can see the videos. And please, you know, share the videos. Show people where chicken comes from. You know, people need to know that this is how these birds are treated. But I was watching the video and I was just thinking, like, you know,
it really is horrific.
Chickens are just birds, right? What if these were parrots? Or what if these were flamingos? Or what if these were, what's the one? What if these were peacocks?
Yeah.
People would be fucking taking to the streets and like ripping their eyes out because they'd be like, oh my God, look at these poor birds. But because they're chickens, like everyone like just kind of acts like it doesn't matter or something. And it's like, it's terrible that we culturally, for some reason, like, are, you know, turn a blind eye to animals like chickens and pigs and turkeys and cows. I mean, think about it. If these were billions of parrots being treated like this, people would never, ever stand for this. And that's not even making the dog and cat analogy, which is, by the way, is totally, you know, fine to do and right to do. But I mean, I'm just saying, if these were other animals that people found cute or endearing in some way, people would never stand for it.
You know, somebody came to Chicken's defense yesterday on Twitter. You may have seen this hashtag Chicken Trump when Donald Trump refused to debate Bernie Sanders. So Twitter created Chicken Trump that, you know, he ran away. And somebody, one of the most popular tweets about that subject was someone said, what did poor chickens ever do to deserve this kind of abuse?
Compared to Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, God. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, on one hand, it's like, yeah, I would. Yeah, no one should be compared to Donald Trump except Donald Trump. He's,
yeah. Or possibly shit.
All right. On that note, you know what time it is, Miko?
Is it time for new vegan products?
It is time for new vegan products. All right. So what are we tasting today, Miko?
So today we are tasting, you guys know the company Earth Balance, which is known for their, you know, vegan spreads. They make, you know, their original one is legendary. They also make now one from olive oil. But people may not know that they have a whole line of...
What do you mean vegan spreads? You mean butter?
Butter,
it's, yeah. It's vegan butter.
Yeah, but they also have like an olive oil spread, different things.
All right, fine.
Anyway, they also have a line of fantastic new like chips and popcorn that are cheese flavored. I don't know how they make their cheese flavoring, but we are today trying their cheddar flavored kettle chips, which I'm going to start with.
Okay.
I'm going to give this back to you then.
By the way, I want to just say Earth Balance. So I haven't tried these yet. These are cheddar flavored potato chips.
Yeah, like kettle cooked potato chips.
Wait, let me grab one. All right.
Hmm. That's good.
Oh my God. Those are great. Yo, that's really, really good. By the way, I want to just say, I'm sorry for the chewing. Earth Balance doesn't just do these. They have it's called like an aged cheesy popcorn or something that they do.
White cheddar popcorn, yeah.
That is unbelievable. And it's vegan and it's so good. But these are really good too. Mm-hmm. Earth Balance is that's really great that they're doing all these products now. I'm so psyched. Yeah, that's delicious.
And they also make a vegan cheese puffs. Mm-hmm. So they're, if you're looking for vegan sort of cheese flavored snacks, they have a great line. And we have a second thing that we want to taste today. And okay, so dear listeners, we promised that we would stop talking about vegan products at Trader Joe's. But as it happens,
Let me say what happened.
Okay.
All right, I'm sorry that we're tasting another Trader Joe's product. I swear I'm not being paid by Trader Joe's. I wish I was, but I'm not. Okay, so last night we went over to our friend's house, and he happens to work for Trader Joe's. And he was like, oh, I got us dessert and whatever. So he pulls out these. They're called cinnamon nut rugula. I'm on like a Jewish kick today. So for those of you who don't know what rugula, I don't know. Rugula? I call it rugula. For those of you who don't know what rugula is, it's this like Jewish pastry cookie thing. And I used to eat the shit out of these before I was vegan. And there's a Jewish deli in LA called Cantor's in the Fairfax area. They make such good rugula. But of course, when I went vegan, rugula has like stuff in it that's not vegan. So he pulls this out and I'm like, Aaron, it says cream cheese right on the packaging. And he's like, no. He's like, look at the ingredients. And I read the ingredients. On the ingredients, it says vegan cream cheese. These are actually vegan.
That's amazing.
Vegan rugula at Trader Joe's. And
now, can I try to describe people who don't know what rugula is? This is kind of like if you did a small cinnamon bun, but from like phyllo dough kind of thing. It's a crunchy, but yet sort of...
It's a Jewish delight.
It is delightful.
There's like nuts in there and cinnamon, and it's like a pastry. It's like a, yeah.
Yeah.
Not really phyllo dough, but kind of. I don't know. But
it's like fluffy.
Well, let me read. It says, traditional cream cheese pastry with raspberry jam and walnuts.
Delicious.
Okay. But I can't believe it's vegan, because why would they say cream cheese pastry on the thing, not label it vegan anywhere? But then when you clearly, like when you read the ingredients, it says vegan cream cheese spread as the ingredient. So it is actually vegan.
Yeah.
You know, and not everything else in it's vegan. So I'm going to eat one right now, even though I ate one last night. Hold on. I'm just going to take a bite. Because it's so good. Hold on.
I wish we could have a live stream of pictures at the same time.
Mm. Oh.
Now, the other exciting thing also discovered from Aaron is that Trader Joe's also has vegan churros in their frozen section, which is crazy. Because so when I moved to LA, this was in 1997, was the first time I ever heard of a churro. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But churros, I guess, are normally not vegan. I haven't had them in years. And last night was the first time, and I was just like, oh my God, we must get these.
Yo, these rugulas, I mean, this is like, it's dope. No, I mean, that's what they say on Empire. Do any of you guys watch Empire?
It's like the only adjective they use.
On Empire, no matter what's going on, it's like no one can say anything's like great or incredible or amazing. Everything is dope. And these cinnamon nut rugula are dope. This is like old school Jewish, you know, fucking Passover at Aunt Molly's house, arugulas. I love these.
Nice.
All right. So, yeah. So, check that out. Wow. I'm going to have to start looking. I'm going to have to start reading. Like, I think that I just...
Who knows what other surprises
right,
they might
have. Right.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, I think I'm going to have to start just, like, checking out more of their stuff because this was a surprise. Maybe there'll be some other surprises, but I'm very happy to have arugulas back in my life. What else, Miko? So, wait. You said... So, these cheddar things... Oh, I'm reading the calorie content.
Don't do that.
All right. This has been a very calorie-intensive week for me between, you know, the donut video that we did last week, and then this week when we were doing this cooking video, like, of course, we're making this stuff, but then it'd be a shame to have it all...
You have to eat it.
...you know, go to waste. So we made a vegan queso with, like, entire bag of Daya cheddar, which was so good. But you know it's like, I mean...
Yeah,
it's
like 100 calories every time you dip a chip.
Yeah, every time you dip a chip, it's like, you know, another 30 minutes on the treadmill.
But it's worth it.
It's really good, though. It's really good. And then we did... what else did we do that was like kind of... Oh, my God.
What about those shakes that you guys made?
Oh, my God. I didn't talk about them. Okay, so Sarah went out and got... Red velvet Oreos, which I thought was just a seasonal thing, but apparently that's like all year round, which I kind of didn't need to know. But now because I love red velvet. I love red velvet cake. And we made a vanilla ice cream red velvet shake that was like out of control. So we just did like ice cream, some almond milk. You know, we threw the red velvet cookies in there. It was amazing.
And the other one was too. You did a peanut butter banana chocolate shake.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my
and
God.
Like I said, we'll have all these videos up in the next few weeks. Now that we have all the footage, we just our Sean who does all the editing. He also shoots them, but he edits these videos together. He'll put them all up and I'll share them on Facebook and Twitter because I love these videos. I just think it's great. I think it's I think showing people that are not as familiar, with veganism, showing them that it's not just about kale and quinoa and sprouts. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Except for sprouts.
Which are grown in hell.
Yeah, I don't like sprouts. But not that there's anything wrong with all that. I mean, eating, simply and eating whole foods and eating all that is great. And it's definitely healthier. Okay? But we need to show people that, vegans can have fun too. We can roll with the best of them. We can have a red velvet shake. We can have some fucking bacon-lined mac and cheese, I don't know what you would even call that.
Like a...
A bomb? A bite?
A bite. A bite. That's good.
So, we have to show that we can do that. And, I think that people are really surprised. We did one a couple weeks ago that was we called it a meatball sub cake. Did I talk about that on the show? I can't remember.
I think you did.
But
it was a big hit.
But it was a big hit. And we had people like Instagramming us, them doing it. And so it's great. Like, it's great to just know that you can, put these videos out there and inspire people to get excited, about vegan cooking and to impress their friends. So I'm super psyched about all these videos coming out. All right. Well, with that, shall we move on to some vegan news? All right. We are going to get through some news. We have a lot to talk about. So let's just get right down to it. Okay, so this is a great article. This is from The Guardian, which is an online news site in the UK. This is talking about the rise of vegan teenagers because of Instagram.
Really?
Yeah, so apparently Instagram has really become this hub for, we've seen this. I mean, I see this at work because, we work with some vegan Instagrammers who have a huge following now. And, teenagers are definitely into Instagram. This is like a social platform that, I guess is mostly used by a younger demographic. And people on Instagram make veganism seem cool. They're posting pictures of food. Now they allow videos on Instagram. They've been doing that for a little while so people show you how to make things. And this is awesome. And then they have all these quotes from all these teenagers talking about, you know, how Instagram has basically, you know, inspired them to become vegan. And I want to throw out some figures here. So there was an article in the New York Times about maybe a year ago, 6 months ago, and it was talking about millennials. Always talking about millennials. Oh Lord, the millennial generation. I love the millennial generation, don't you?
I do.
I do love them. I think
they're
they get
generation nice.
I think they get a lot of shit. And I actually love the millennials. You know, I really do. So anyway, listen to these figures. In this article, which was called Generation Nice, and they were talking all about, you know, these millennials, they said 1% of baby boomers are committed vegetarians. 4% of Gen Xers are committed vegetarians. But 12% of millennials are committed vegetarians.
That's amazing.
12%. I mean, think about it. That grew three times as much since the Gen Xers, which is the generation that I happen to be in, before them. I think that's incredible, and I think social media has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to think about this. You know, back in the day, if I wanted to show you, you know, an undercover video, let's say, I'd have to give you a DVD or a VHS tape. Then you'd have to, you know, stick it in your DVD thing or VHS thing.
VCR.
Right. Then you'd have to watch it. Then you'd have to pass it on to a friend, hope they watch it. Then there was the whole cost of printing all of these DVDs and tapes and whatever. Now, you know, within a matter of seconds, millions of people can see an undercover investigation, or millions of people can see a film, you know, like Forks Over Knives or Vegucated or what's the other one that I'm thinking of? Like Cowspiracy. Like, this is like people are just Netflixing and chilling and learning about veganism at the same time. So I think it's really amazing.
I think the other thing Instagram really does is show how amazing and delicious vegan food is. Because you think about, I remember when we became vegan and we bought cookbooks, there were hardly any pictures of what the recipes looked like. And you're kind of like, if I imagine back in the VCR era, when you were told, oh, well, you can't eat meat now that you know where it comes from. What are you going to eat? You had no visual reference for all the amazing dishes you could make. Like, I think I look at your guys' Pinterest, for example, just to see, like, the incredible abundance of, like, stunning recipes that if you wanted to impress, like, let's say you have a date and you want to make an impressive, you know, vegan meal, there are so many fantastic ideas that you can just see that, oh, my God, this looks amazing. Like, what is maple glazed tempeh? Holy shit, when you see it.
If you want inspiration for vegan cooking, go to Mercy for Animals' Pinterest page. It is off the chain. We have so many pins. Sarah is the one who curates all that stuff for us. And there's thousands of pins.
It looks like vegan heaven.
Yeah, it's an amazing resource. Like, definitely check that out. But, you know, when people say, you know, oh my God, you know, the work that you do, like, you must feel so depressed all the time. You must feel so... This is what gives me hope. You know, when I see that 12% of this upcoming generation is committed vegetarians, and it's mostly because of animal welfare reasons, I'm like, the world's changing. And, like, this generation is the largest generation in history, and businesses are going to have to reflect. I mean, they're not going to want to buy, you know, what was traditionally, you know, the standard American diet of, you know, meat, dairy, and eggs. They want more choices. They want new things. And I think that we're starting to see that be reflected, you know, on the business side. So I think that this gives me hope.
Can I segue from this into a very closely related story, which was very amazing, came out this week from Finland, where I'm from, that the city of Helsinki is introducing a pilot program to offer vegan food in kindergartens.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? I see that you have it here amongst my vegan stories, but babe, this is in Finnish.
And I know.
Honestly, I can't understand a goddamn word of this. Like,
it was more like a reminder for us to talk about it, because it's interesting. There's a city in Finland called Tampere, which has a substantial vegan community, and there, private kindergartens have offered vegan meals. And when vegan and vegetarian parents in Helsinki found out that this was an option that was available, they asked the city and said, why don't you have any even vegetarian options in kindergartens? And the city just this week announced we're going to start a pilot program. 20 kindergartens are going to have vegan food options.
That's amazing. That's
city kindergartens.
That's really, really cool. By the way, I have to ask you, Finnish words are really long, Mikko.
Yes.
Like,
that's because most words that are separate words in the English language, like I've told you this, air traffic control center is one word in Finnish. It is lentoliikenteen valvontakeskus.
That's one word? One word. That's like a whole sentence in English.
Yeah.
This is vegan urukka puota Helsingin. Oh my God. Valtuutettuja.
Let me read that.
Yeah, so, I can't read this. The words are too long. I don't know where to start and where to stop.
So this is what it's supposed to sound like.
All right, this is the headline, peeps.
Vegaaniruoka puhuttaa Helsingin valtuutettuja keskiviikkona, vaikka sitä syö toistaiseksi vain muutama kymmenen päivä kotilasta.
What does that mean?
This says, vegan food is the topic among Helsinki City Council members on Wednesday, even though vegan food is presently eaten by only a few dozen kindergartners.
Wow, that's really... I love it. I love it. And by the way, we were in Finland recently, and the vegan options in Finland were fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. But this is really exciting.
And there's another Finnish story I just saw today that a Finnish supermarket chain is moving. They have they've traditionally had vegan products, vegetarian, you know, meat alternatives in separate sections. They're now moving them all next to meat.
Because
they said the demand is so big. So they're usually meat and dairy are right next to each other. They're saying now that they're going to be bridged by a section that goes from vegan meat to vegan dairy products. Or, you know, dairy
and that's a good segue to this next story that I was going to do.
We're on a roll today.
We're on a roll. All right. So this is really, this is a cool story. So I there's a company called Beyond Meat. I love them. I buy their stuff all
the time.
Their
burger is amazing.
They do this thing called the Beast Burger. They do these vegan crumbles, these beef crumbles that are amazing. They do chicken strips. Yeah, they're fucking awesome. They have introduced a new burger called the Beyond Burger. And this is not your traditional veggie burger, folks. This is like, it looks like ground beef. Like
it looks
the
like
video,
a ground beef patty. It's crazy.
And it like is supposed to like bleed. Like, it's supposed to have, like, juices. Like
it looks just like a traditional
like a
hamburger.
Well, anyway, they introduced it this week. They introduced it to only one location at the Whole Foods in Boulder, Colorado, of all places. Why not L.A.?
Like, I
Boulder,
know.
Colorado. Anyway, this sold out in an hour. Like, people were so thirsty for this burger.
It was, like, $3.65 here.
No, it was, like, sold out in an hour. And what's really cool is that they're getting Whole Foods to sell it in the meat section. So, like, usually when you buy, you know, the meat analogs, whatever you want to call them, fake meats, grain meats, vegan meats, whatever, they're usually in their own section, separate from the meat. But this is actually going to be sold with the meat. And I think that's really interesting in terms of marketing. I think that it's a sign of the times that I feel we're, you know, going to be moving away. We're definitely, I mean, people are definitely eating less meat. And all these new products, you know, that are coming out that are really now very closely mimicking, you know, the flavor and the texture of meat. I think we're coming into a time where we don't have to separate it and make it its own like little thing. It's going to be like, no, like when you go to the meat section, you have a choice. You want plant-based meat, which is kinder and better for the environment and cleaner,
death-free,
you know, cleaner, all those things. Or do you want this, you know, carcass, dead body shit?
And you know? If you want to see what this burger looks like, they have a really great video introducing it, which I remember when I was watching it, I just thought, oh my God, the future has arrived. And they did a great thing. It's like they show you just like a barbecue scene, what it looks like, how it cooks, and it's just astonishing. And they give you all the health benefits of the burger too. So
yeah, no,
can't wait to try it.
It's very, very cool. I can't wait to try it either. And I think it's great that it's being sold in the meat section. And I think, again, I just think it's a sign of the times. All right, next story. Sad story. Two racehorses died at Preakness. This was within, I think, the first four races.
Yeah.
Preakness is like some stupid horse race bullshit. I gotta say,
antiquated shit that should be stopped.
I like can't stand this shit. Like, what the why is this still going on? Why are we still racing horses to death? What is this?
And I don't think people realize that that is indeed what takes place. Like, this is the story that you're talking about is from the Dallas Morning News. They did an opinion column that was about how these two horses died before the race, right? During
something, yeah.
One of them died in a race, or right after the race. They won. They were photographed and then had a heart attack and died. And the other horse broke their leg. and then had to be shot. Because, of course, this is how the industry treats horses. It's like the horse can't race. I mean, I remember this as a kid when you heard that, oh, a horse broke their leg and had to be shot. I was always like, oh, that's so terrible that has to be done to horses. But, of course, it doesn't have to be done. The horse could be rehabilitated and retired. But who in the horse racing industry is interested in that? No one. They just want to make money and then kill the horses when they're useless to them.
It's just so sad to me that, you know, in this day and age that, like, you know, I mean, PETA did an amazing undercover investigation. I think it was 2 years ago and into horse racing. And
this is when Valediction was rescued?
Yeah. And it was just shocking. What they, the drugs that they give these horses, the fact that they make these horses race when they're injured, the fact that they literally race these horses to the point of exhaustion where they die of heart attacks. I mean, this is sick. If you want to race yourself to that point of exhaustion where you're having a heart attack, because fine, you do it to yourself, but don't make some innocent animal do this. This is really, really fucked up. And the fact that there's all these people and they get all dressed up and they get their stupid fucking hats on and everything like that, I just want to be like, you know what? Fuck off. You're killing animals. I hope you're happy. I hope you're proud of yourself that you go down to the stupid horse racing track and watch animals be abused.
And
that's awful.
And it just speaks to the fact that whenever animals are used, behind the scenes, there's death, there's suffering.
Yes.
There's animal torture.
Yes. And there was years ago, there was they found, like, cause, you know, a lot of these horses, when, you know, they're spent, when they can't race anymore because they've been fucking, you know, abused, they're sent to slaughter.
Yeah, isn't that
they're
shocking?
Sent to slaughter
they
for
had
horse
a,
meat.
What was it? There was one big winner. I don't know if it was a Triple Crown winner, but one
yes.
of these big races
yes.
was like found in a slaughterhouse.
Yes, yes.
Thank you for your service, I guess,
yes.
you know, for the horses.
We need to. Horse racing should just go away. Like, no one should be supporting this. It's no different than going to fucking SeaWorld or any other, you know, amusement park or any other place where they exploit animals. It's just. It's awful. It's very sad when you read this stuff. I just feel like, wow, like, I can't believe that people are still supporting this. Okay, this is a... Oh, God, another sad story. Miko, jeez. This was an elephant who died
yeah.
after 60 years alone in her cell. This was at a zoo in Japan. This is very, very sad. And, oh, God, just the photo of this elephant is so sad.
Can you imagine 60 years?
They this is from the dodo, and they call her name was Hanako, and they said that she was the world's loneliest elephant. It's so sad. Zoos are such a tragedy. You know, elephants are extremely.
It reminds me of that polar bear, Arturo. You know, that there was a big campaign to free him. And
elephants are very social animals. They, you know, live in kind of matriarchal societies, and to think of, you know, a very social animal like that being all alone by herself.
And again, for what?
And for what? Exactly. Like, again, this is just, in this day and age, like, why are we still doing this to
animals?
Get
your BBC, you know, Africa Blu-ray with David Attenborough narrating about elephants and leave the animals in the wild.
You know what? I gotta say, like, I'm against zoos as well.
Absolutely.
Like, I think zoos are really, really sad places. I think that taking animals out of their natural habitat, out of the wild, and making them live in, you know, live in an unnatural place just to be on display, to me, feels very archaic. Like, it seems like that also is from, like, another time. And it's still, you know, it's still going on.
And then these places disingenuously go extinction, though. And they're like, oh, as if they're saving species from extinction. And true, there are, you know, breeding programs for animals that are critically endangered in the wild. But they don't have to live in zoos. They should live in sanctuaries. Let the animals be as free as they can be if you're trying to save them. Don't put them in some hideous concrete pen where people gawk at them all day and where they're in a completely unnatural environment and pretend you're doing anything except keeping them prisoner.
And there's this practice of, like, when they, like, it's like overbreeding or something where they, like, feed the animals to other animals.
Oh my
like
God.
When they fed that giraffe to remember they fed what was that
Marius
story? Marius the giraffe to the lion, and people were freaking out, and
they literally,
but it's not that
this
uncommon.
Is, this
apparently.
Is like talk about like a, this was such a scandal. So this was the zoo in Copenhagen.
Right.
Where they
this was a couple
they,
years
they
ago.
Have these, they call these animals surplus animals.
Surplus animals, that's what
where
I'm
they, it's
about.
Like, we bred them and now we never need them. And literally, they like shot the giraffe and chopped it up in front of children.
Right, and had the lions eating it in front of the children.
And then they were like, "What's wrong?"
There was
when
such
the whole world went crazy.
There was such an outcry over it. It's a mess again.
But
if you want to know why, if you want to talk about extinction, don't pat yourself on the back for having animals in the zoo that are no longer in the wild. Maybe we should be asking ourselves, why are they no longer in the wild? And what can we do to stop further extinction?
This is the largest mass extinction of species since...
Right. Since, like, the dinosaurs like that. And it's like, we need to ask ourselves why that is. You know, the solution isn't putting all these animals in, you know, zoos. The solution is stopping what we're doing so that we're not causing this mass extinction anymore.
And I'm sorry, it's bullshit. You know, we haven't saved the species. The truth is that if this species is gone from the wild, we fucked it up.
Yeah, we did.
It's too late to pretend that now we have two rare, you know, lemurs in a zoo. Oh, the species isn't gone. Right. It is gone, and we did it.
Right. Oh, we're on fire today. Oh. All right. This was good news, actually. Now I have a good story. Apparently, there was a challenge in California to the state's ban on shark fin.
Really?
Which, I don't know who the fuck would challenge that, but anyway, there was.
Donald Trump, probably.
It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refuses to hear it, so that means that the ban is going to be able to stay in place.
Who are these assholes? Can I just
ask? I don't know. Like, the whole shark... Well, it says here that, you know, shark fin soup and all that, and, you know, there's communities where that's, like, a thing, but, like, you know what? Like, no. I'm sorry, but you don't get to have that. Like, it's, I don't know. It's very, very sad. If, you know, the shark population in the ocean is something down like 90% or something.
Can I just say something here? This is what drives me crazy. Vegans are told, oh, you're elitist. You want this and that. You want fucking, you know, one of the world's most important apex predators to be killed so you can have fucking shark fin soup. Talk about elitism.
Well, it's just one of those things that, you know, it's...
People drive me crazy.
I don't know. I just think it's completely unnecessary. You know, I was in... There used to be this vegan market in Santa Monica. What was that place called?
Viva La Vegan.
Viva La Vegan. They had vegan shark fin.
Yeah, eat that.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. I was like, well, I guess anything can be made vegan. They had like a vegan shark fin for making shark fin soup vegan, I guess. But yeah, I mean, when you watch the videos of what they do with the sharks, basically what they do is they trap them somehow, they cut off their fins, and then they let them go into the water still alive. And when they don't have their fins, they can't swim. So literally they just die of starvation. They just like basically sink and die. And it's so tragic. And like I said, the shark population in the ocean is something down like 90%.
Yeah.
They are one of the oldest animals on Earth. They've been around for, I think, hundreds of millions of years. And it's just really sad to think that, you know, they play a vital role in, you know, the ecosystem of the ocean. And just to cut off their fins so you can eat the soup? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, horrible.
All right. So this is scary. There is a superbug, a crazy strain of E. coli that has been found for the first time in the United States. And this is like, this is a new strain, and it's basically resistant to antibiotics, and, oh God.
And this is literally like, am I mistaken to say, I believe that the head of the CDC, just to give a sense of how serious this is, said that this could be the beginning of the end of the, like, we would be entering potentially the post-antibiotic era. Like,
yeah.
Nothing will work on this stuff.
Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because, this has also been found in pigs and raw pork in China. And
that's where this strain originates,
and
right?
The factory farming industry really plays a major, major role in the proliferation of antibiotic-resistant superbugs. Because on factory farms, they have animals in confined areas, so many of them, and they're stressed out, and the conditions are filthy, and, you know, it's like what would happen to people. Like, you know, disease runs rampant, and so they overdose them with antibiotics. They also use antibiotics on factory farms because of animals grow quicker with low dose antibiotics.
So it's like a prophylactic use of antibiotics.
Right. Now, because of that, these diseases, which by the way are zoonotic diseases, which many of which can be, you know, can jump to humans, like we've seen with, actually tuberculosis originated in cattle. Gonorrhea has been found in pigs, and that also, you know, obviously.
Isn't MRSA one of these things?
MRSA, obviously, you know, bird flu, swine flu, all these things, you know, are, you know, yes, like animals get them, but humans also get them. And these, you know, the bacteria can mutate. And especially when they're being exposed over and over to these low dose of antibiotics, they can, you know, it's like when they say when you're on a course of antibiotics, when they say like you have to finish the full course, because if you don't, it can create a dangerous situation where, you know, bacteria can mutate and actually become stronger than the antibiotic.
And this particular strain of E. coli, just to give a sense again of how dangerous this is, 50% of people who get it die.
Right. So we're really creating a very scary situation. And we've already seen, you know, antibiotic-resistant MRSA, which, by the way, I know we blogged about this on MFA blog not too long ago, that pig farmers were coming down with because they were handling pigs who had it. And this is just creating a very scary world. There, you know, I read an article that said in 50 years, I think it's something like 10 million people will die a year in the U.S. from antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So if this scares you, and you don't want to face a future where all of a sudden our medication doesn't work anymore, consider not supporting the industries that are allowing this kind of stuff to proliferate. And, you know, maybe move over to some plant-based food.
I read this amazing monograph that one of the leading epidemiologists in England wrote about the threat of a post-antibiotic era. And she said, we could literally see in our lifetime, going back to when you would get a cut in your finger, and before you know it, you have septicemia, and you have to have limbs amputated.
Oh my God, that's like when you're watching like an old school film, yeah. Like a film that takes place like in the 1800s or whatever. And as soon as someone's like lying in bed and they get like, it's like they're like dying, and like the only thing they can do is put a wet rag on your head. Do we want to go back to the wet rag on our head? No. No, we want to take antibiotics so we can get better. Or like it's like when you see people cough in an old school movie and they cough up blood.
Oh, you know it's
then you
done.
Know it's dead. You know they're gonna die. Like it's like they're like, and then you look at the handkerchief and there's blood in it and they're like, oh, she's dead within 5 minutes of this film. But I don't want to go back to that. You know, so it's like we have to think about that. And by the way, I just want to clear something up. You know, I've heard a lot of people say who like really don't get it. They'll be like, oh, but you know, people can catch E. coli from, you know, spinach or I think peanuts had a contamination or salmonella. It was one of them at one point. Yes, that's true. But here's the thing. E. coli comes from fecal matter. It doesn't, and it comes from cross-contamination. So yes, if spinach can have E. coli on it, but the spinach didn't produce it. Spinach is not sick with E. coli. It's contaminated.
Spinach doesn't shit.
No, spinach doesn't shit. So it's because of cross-contamination, and it's because of animal agriculture. It's not because growing spinach.
They use manure in the fields that comes from factory farms.
It's true. There's manure. There can be cross-contamination if you eat vegetables at a restaurant and something is prepared in an area where there was raw meat. People talk about that all the time. Even in the supermarket, you know, when you put your vegetables down on that mat that goes...
Oh, I hate that.
It skeeves me out because, you know, people put, like, chicken on that, and it's not in... I mean, it's in the package, but sometimes, like, the
juice... Oh, you
the
see juice, the wet stains
the
on
wet,
it, and you're like...
That makes me sick. And that shit can have salmonella.
Yeah. You know, I'm always, like, ready with the Lysol wipe, being like, may I?
A very large portion of chicken, you know, is contaminated with salmonella. So don't blame the spinach. Don't blame the peanuts. Blame this stuff because this is where it's really coming from.
Yeah.
Speaking of chicken, I'd like to we did this blog called 5 Reasons Eating Chicken is Gross as Fuck. Should I go through them?
Why not?
All right. It's not really news, but maybe it'll inspire someone to stop eating chicken. All right. First one is salmonella, which we talked about. And by the way, according to the USDA, around 25% of cut-up chicken meat and about 50% of all ground chicken sold in stores is contaminated with salmonella. So good luck with that.
Delicious.
Filthy conditions, which I kind of talked about on factory farms, chickens being left to rot and with insect infestations that we've documented, like these poor birds.
You
it's
saw that
disgusting.
in your Tyson investigation.
Tyson investigation was awful. And by the way, there was also a terrible, I mean, this Foster Farms in California was actually shut down by the government because of a cockroach infestation.
This was at the same time, as remember, 500 people were in the hospital with highly virulent salmonella.
Disgusting.
And that didn't warrant, you know, shutting this place
awful,
down.
Awful, awful. One of the reasons that we have is that it's full of shit. Chicken meat, the USDA in 2011 reported that 90% of defects in chicken carcasses at slaughter plants involved, quote, visible fecal contamination that was missed by company employees. So, if you're eating chicken, chances are you're eating shit.
Gardein doesn't sound so bad now, does it?
It's killing the planet. Yes, it is. This was also Environmental America reported that Tyson, which I said is the largest poultry producer in the world, is responsible for dumping more toxic pollution into our waterways than companies like ExxonMobil and Dow Chemical.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And the last reason we had was exploited workers, which I know people, you know, like to demonize factory farm workers. And I think that that's unfair because a lot of these people, these are last resort jobs. A lot of the workers are undocumented. You know,
and they're treated horribly.
They're treated horribly. And, you know, I don't think anyone grows up saying, I want to work in a slaughterhouse or a factory farm. Trust me. But, you know, from this is what we wrote. We were from being forced to wear diapers because they're denied bathroom breaks to losing limbs. Workers on chicken farms are treated appallingly. And in fact, Cesar Chavez, who was a workers' right advocate, was vegetarian because he knew the animal agriculture industry mistreated its workers. So
it's still like the jungle out there.
So if, oh God, if you haven't read The Jungle, hold, that's the most depressing fucking book. But it's a great book. It was written in 1905. Something like that. And it was really the first expose of America's animal farms. And it was written by Upton Sinclair. I think you can get a copy of it for free on Kindle.
Yeah.
Because those old titles are free. Definitely read it. I read it this year. I never read it before. It's basically, I mean, a lot of people give that book credit for putting like the modern animal welfare fight in motion for meat, for animals exploited for meat. Definitely check it out. I will say, though, that book is fucking depressing as shit. I mean, that's like, it's like one thing after another. You're just like, oh my God, can something good please happen in this book? It's just like, it's about Lithuanian immigrants that move to Chicago and get jobs in the meat industry. And it is absolutely horrific.
And it's such a widely acclaimed book. I read The Jungle in middle school in Finland.
And a lot of the stuff that he describes in that book that happened over 100 years ago is still happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's still happening. It's awful. But going back to chicken, just know that there are incredible vegan versions of chicken. So if you still want that taste and you still want that texture and you still want that, check out Beyond Meat, their chicken strips. Check out Gardein makes amazing chicken, you know, products that are, you know, meatless.
And in all these public taste tests, people can't tell what's chicken and what's not. They are really amazing. It's the easiest thing to replace in your diet.
It's literally, it's so, so easy. So check this stuff out. It's really, really great. And you don't have to worry about salmonella or, you know, all the cruelty involved or destroying the planet. You can feel good about what you're eating, you know? So anyway, guys, with that, we're coming to the end of another show. Miko, we survived.
Yes.
And we're still married.
Yes.
Neither of us have called our lawyers. everybody, thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. And we'll be back next week with another new show.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.